Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich. It's no secret that healthcare in this country costs a lot. That's especially true at the end of life. A new study indicates a quarter of Medicare recipients exhaust their entire savings and sometimes more on out-of-pocket healthcare expenses during the last 5 years of their lives. This goes along with previous numbers that have shown the last few years of life are the most expensive, medically speaking. But in this country, talking about end-of-life costs is mired in politics. As part of the Affordable Care Act, one of the most contentious debates was over the proposal that would allow doctors who had conversations with their patients about end-of-life care options to be reimbursed for the counseling. Former vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin infamously said the law was creating death panels that would ration health care. In the ensuing furor, Dr. Art Dersey says an opportunity was lost to have a rational conversation about the costs of health care as we come to the end of our lives. He tells Lake Effect Stephanie Lecce it's a conversation we need to have.
We've lost an opportunity there to be able to at least take a look at getting people's wishes down and documented and having physicians incentivized to do that. In fact, there were regulations that were proposed during the Bush administration that would have provided some Medicare reimbursement for that conversation. The problem with that was that it was characterized as a death panel. If you're bringing this up about me, you must be really kind of pushing in that direction. And that, of course, is not true. But what happened is that physicians then who were going to be able to have reimbursement for the discussion at the minimum every 5 years. So there wouldn't, you know, that every 5 years that might be revisited as an issue. Those regulations were dropped. They were dropped from healthcare reform. They were seen as a third rail of politics. And unfortunately, we really lost the ability to talk about the conversation and the documentation.
Did we miss an opportunity as a country to have a rational conversation about end-of-life healthcare costs?
As far as the healthcare costs go, that was buried in there because the implication was, well, if you're doing this, the reason you're doing this is just trying to save money. The reality is that if you do surveys, most people do not want to die in a hospital on machines. And so the reality is that they would like to have that information out there if asked, but if not asked, they tend not to bring it up and to say it. So will there be cost savings if people's wishes are adhered to? Most likely, because most people don't want that. And we tend to, when in doubt, if someone hasn't told us, we're not sure what to do, our default position is to do more, you know, just to keep on doing, because in part, that's an expectation in the system, in part because we've not learned to either, you know, state what we want and make sure that patients' wishes are adhered to, or sometimes it's not going to work anyway. But, you know, sometimes doctors or families go, well, just go ahead and do everything and let's continue to do it. So there would be some cost savings. On the other hand, because of the aging of the population, because of the medical care that they need, it's still going to be a major issue for the near and far future in the United States. So I think we lost an opportunity mainly to allow people to have their wishes fulfilled.
Is this conversation, is the anxiety around this conversation different here in the U.S. compared with other countries? Do other countries find themselves in this same situation where the idea of talking about costs of medical care and end-of-life care gets so complicated and highly politicized?
Well, there's no question that we have a major problem in talking about costs and where the money comes from and where it should go. We don't want rationing in this country. We don't want anyone telling us what, you know, we should do. Other countries are not as technology focused as we are. We tend to think that more technology is good, and many times it is, sometimes it isn't. Also, in some countries, there's just a thought that toward the end of life, you won't be doing everything, even if people would demand it or want it. And, you know, it sounds horrific, but people in France, people in Great Britain, even people in Canada don't expect to get absolutely everything all the time. And so I do think that we're unique in that way, and we pay for it. We absolutely pay for it. The Medicare portion of the budget, as everybody knows in the campaign, is one in which it's going to be in the future extremely expensive, and our healthcare costs have gone up from, you know, when I was in medical school to something like 4 or 5% of the gross domestic product, now to 17% of it. And, you know, if nothing is done, it'll still keep on eating up more and more. And pretty soon we will be servicing our debt and we'll be paying for, you know, medical care of, you know, enormous proportions for everyone. Now, obviously, we shouldn't reach that point, but the political conversation about it is highly charged because on the one side, people charge you're rationing, you're, you know, going to have death panels. On the other side, it is true that individuals do need to work and pay into a system. Lots of people have to pay for and buy health insurance, and it costs. And it can't be drawn from nowhere. It has to be drawn from the cost of people working to be able to cover it and employers currently who are covering it as well.
But you contend that there could be savings if we really have more specific conversations about what exactly we want instead of just kind of throwing everything at the wall at the end of life and seeing what sticks.
Yes, it looking at people's wishes, most people don't want that. Interestingly, some people do, and if they fill out advanced care planning documents and the technology has, you know, a chance to help them, physicians, I think, will and should. If it's not going to, if it's not going to be effective, obviously there's no obligation to do that. But in general, when people are asked, their scenario for end of life is not on machines in the hospital. It's at home, surrounded by family, free from unwanted technology. And in fact, sooner or later, this great technology will fail, right? The death rate for each individual is still one. We haven't been able to change that. And so sooner or later, there is nothing more that we can do other than supportive and palliative care, taking care of pain and other symptoms like breathlessness and other things at the end of life.
Well, so let me ask you, how has the conversation changed as palliative care and the idea of treating the symptoms versus trying to find the cure becomes more acceptable in our society?
So I think the development of palliative care has been extremely important because we have this right to be free from unwanted medical treatment. Then what? You know, then what? Well, then what is you now have the dying process. And unless you attend to the symptoms and the anxiety and the concerns of the dying patient, it looked like a terrible choice. You either have all this life-sustaining medical treatment or you die without support. And the area of palliative care was developed to address that interim period of time when there's nothing more technologically that we can do, but there's a lot more symptomatically and a lot more supportively that we can do. We can no longer cure, but we can care and palliate. And palliate literally means to be able to alleviate or to relieve symptoms. And it's an important adjunct to intensive care because when you can cure, that's when you go full bore. When you can't, you go down this other road. And this other road has been important in the bioethics conversation. The Supreme Court in 1997 looked at whether or not patients could have the right to die, whether or not they could have the right to assistance in suicide. So it would be a constitutional right to have physician-assisted suicide rather than the legislatively enacted few states that have it. And the Supreme Court unanimously said, no, there's no right to die, except in a small number of states, Oregon, Washington, and Montana, in which physician-assisted suicide is an option. And it may also become one in Massachusetts. It's on the ballot for this fall. In those states, physicians can't administer medications. Only an individual can take medications prescribed by a physician. And that occurs in a small number of deaths, one in 500 in those states. And there are a number of safeguards that are set up and need to be, of course. But in one of the dissents, Justice Sandra Day O'Connor said, you know, there is this concept palliative care and people should be able to die with relief of symptoms. And if for some reason this is not the case, we would revisit whether or not there should be a right to die. But as long as you have this other option, you know, the death should occur naturally and people should be able to have their symptoms addressed. So even in looking at whether or not the Constitution, you know, has this right, they looked at whether or not there were other ways of treating symptoms. And they actually adopted Roman Catholic theological principle called the principle of double effect, which basically says if you do something to be able to relieve pain and pain relief is your goal, the side effect that might occur of death is not something that you intend and something that's accepted as a risk. Obviously, you need to have your goal, the relief of pain. But when that happens, that's not something that you're responsible for. And in fact, without the principle of double effect, physicians would be very reluctant, and they were over the years, to prescribe strong pain medication because, you know, they were concerned about the side effect, which might be respiratory arrest and death. Even though that occurs rarely, it does occur as a side effect. And the fact is that when someone is dying, that isn't necessarily the worst outcome. Dying in pain is a worse outcome for these individuals.
Well, Dr. Art Dursey, thank you so much for coming in.
Stephanie, thank you very much.
Dr. Arthur Dursey is the director of the Center for Bioethics and Medical Humanities at the Medical College of Wisconsin. He spoke with Stephanie Lecce as part of our Death and Dying in the 21st Century series. Next week on the series, we'll hear about how children cope with grief and turn our focus to the role of palliative care. Keep listening after a break. Did you know there was an initial Emancipation Proclamation that came well before the one we're all familiar with? We'll learn more next on Lake Effect.